Heads up, this episode contains a racial slur and mentions of sexual assault. History and music, economics and journalism, freedom and family are all prominent in this year's impressive crop of Oscar nominees for Outstanding Documentary Feature.
This year's nominees draw on animation, archival footage, unforgettable interviews, indelible visuals. They tackle issues including mass incarceration, the plight of refugees, and what parts of the past we celebrate most. And most of the films are streaming now. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're bringing you a guide to this year's Oscar-nominated documentary feature films.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Smartwool. Smartwool makes merino wool socks and apparel to fuel your adventures outside because they want to see you doing what you love. Whether you're a peak bagger or a trailhead tailgater, Smartwool is here to make sure your good times don't get spoiled by Mother Nature. So get outside and get comfortable out of your comfort zone. See what nature has to offer, even if it's your nature to just kick back. Go far. Feel good.
It's just me and Aisha today. We're going to run through these five nominees, all of which I will say I think are just excellent. There's not a clunker or a boring entry in this bunch, which has not honestly always been the case.
No.
But I will completely celebrate whichever of these manages to win because I think they're all great. Let's dive right in with the first one. Flea is a very interesting entry in that it's also nominated for international feature. It's from Denmark and animated feature. It uses animation as a way to protect the identity of its central figure, who goes by the name Amin. He was a refugee from Afghanistan who came to Denmark and was separated from his family, and he's about to get married. So he's preparing to talk more about his past with his husband because he's mostly kept his past very private. This one is directed by Jonas Poher Rasmussen. It's streaming on Hulu. I was so impressed by just the unusual approach in terms of the animation, the way that the storytelling covers so much ground. What did you think of this one?
Oh, yeah. I loved this. And I tried to know as little about it as possible going into it.
Me too.
You mentioned animation, and one of my favorite sequences is actually sort of early on in the film when Amin is recounting his early childhood, and we're flashing back to the 80s. At some point, Take on Me by A-ha is playing in the background, and suddenly the animation goes from what most of the film looks like to imitating that iconic music video of Take on Me. And I just think it's like such a whirlwind because this is a moment, a rare moment in the film where he gets to be sort of free and sort of carefree, unlike much of the film, which is much more heavy and at times very depressing. And so those little flourishes, and also the fact like this technically isn't a fully animated film. There are moments where there's like B-roll footage and newsreel footage.
Right.
But like, I love the way it plays with all those different kinds of visuals because it makes the film feel very, very alive. And I was just really struck by how great this was. And also by how at the end of it, there is sort of a happy ending, or at least a comforting, heartwarming ending that you don't necessarily expect going into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other thing I really like about this one is that typically if you were to have a guy in a documentary telling you the story of his childhood, you would pretty much have two choices. One is to just be showing him as he tells the story of his childhood, just watching him in the present telling the story. The other is some kind of reenactment kind of situation.
Yeah.
And everybody, I think, has had the experience of reenactments. It certainly, they can be effective in certain films, but they can also be very cheesy looking and very distracting. And what happens in this film is that because of the animation, it's seamless between when they're showing you Amin in the present, it's animated. So there is not a break between seeing his life now and seeing his life then as he describes it. It seems like it kind of gets you out of that reenactment trap, which I think is so difficult in documentaries about people remembering the past.
Yeah, and it's sort of a twofold usage, right? Because it's that, but it's also, I mean, is sort of, this is an alias and he does have to keep his identity hidden. So it adds an extra layer of like, a creative choice that also serves like a dual purpose that I think is profound.
That one is streaming on Hulu. Again, it's called Flea. recommend that one. I'm just going to keep saying recommend that one throughout this entire episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the next one we have is called Ascension. It's directed by Jessica Kingdon. And you'll see it described as being about the Chinese dream, quote unquote, if you read the synopsis. If that's not a familiar term to you as to specifically what that refers to, I would say it's about work in contemporary China, including factory work, service work, entrepreneurship, work of all kinds. And it's really told through just watching people at work, watching people being trained for work, talking about their work. Beauty influencers, drivers, butlers, people who make widgets in big production facilities. You can watch this one now on Paramount Plus. I was so blown away by the visuals of this because it seems like it is about such ordinary life.
Yeah.
And yet it's so, so pretty.
This is definitely the type of movie that you can't just have on in the background.
Right.
Not that any of these you want to be, but like this especially because it is non-narrative. There are no talking heads. There's no sort of like voiceover narration guiding you through the themes of this film. In a way, it kind of reminded me of the movie Samsara that was directed by Ron Frick. And that movie is also a non-narrative film that's like heavy on visuals, and the scope is slightly bigger in terms of just like that movie is focused on many, many countries and many different, they filmed it over 5 years. And this film is focused mostly in China. But even this film, it's about China, but then it's also about like Western influence on China.
For sure.
Because for sure. There's one scene where you get a moment with a factory where they're making Keep America Great hats, yeah. You know, and there's all this talk about like, how to interact with Western business people and etiquette.
And how they're huggers.
Yes, huggers. And how many teeth to show when you're smiling as a woman mm-hmm, in the business mm-hmm. sphere. Like so many layers to this film. And just hearing people talk and interact in those ways is really, really astounding. And I think that, you know, everything from the visuals to the sound to just the scope of what it's trying to tell and the way it moves throughout all these different aspects of Chinese culture, it really blew me away. And like Linda, yes, we recommend it.
But also, I think particularly in the early sections where a lot of it is factory work, the composition of shots in this movie is just stunning. There are so many just astonishingly beautiful shots of pattern and geometry and movement. There's a very early shot of a huge number of bicycles.
Yeah.
It is a stunner. And I love a movie where I keep just stopping and being like, look at that shot. And this movie is also like that.
There's also a very long sequence involving sex dolls that just like, my mind was blown. Just things that I hadn't really thought about, like painting on the nipples and using the right color. Like
watching people go about making sex dolls in this very matter-of-fact way. It is completely fascinating. Yeah. And you can tell that the director has a feel for the kind of giving you a sense of what these dolls feel like mm-hmm. and what they feel like to work on. It would be worth the entire movie, even if you just watched that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recommend that one too. And again, that one's on Paramount Plus. Attica, directed and produced by Stanley Nelson and Tracy A. Curry, might be the one of these that's maybe the most traditional in the form of it as far as an Oscar documentary. Mm. It is, of course, about the prison uprising at Attica in 1971. It's a combination of archival footage, some of which I will warn you is very brutal, and interviews with people who were there and were involved, including a number of inmates, journalists, and other people who became part of this civilian committee that was sent in to try to negotiate during this 5-day event. It's a very hard watch. And as I said, it probably is the one that looks the most like other historical documentaries, just in terms of form. But I think in terms of its subject and how it treats its subject, I found it completely riveting.
Yeah. I mean, I look at this as sort of like a great companion piece to something like Ava DuVernay's 13th.
Yes, yes.
Because it is very much in that conversation of police reform as well as incarceration and all of those things. And if I'm going to be completely honest, I didn't really know anything about Attica outside of Dog Day Afternoon and the fact that it's quoted there. I knew bits and pieces, but this really comes at it from some of the sources who were there, including many of the inmates who were there and part of the uprising. I think it provides a really great context for where Attica, the town, was at that time. It was a primarily white town, and there were like only two careers to hold in that town. It was either working at the prison or working on a farm. And it really like puts into context the fact that overwhelmingly the people in control of the prison were white, and the ones who were in the prison were mostly black and brown people. And when you talk about the imagery, like, this was one of the movies, along with Flea, that really just kind of shook me in a way and left me speechless. There's one moment in particular where we're talking about the actual ambush that happened after several days of negotiating or attempts to negotiate. They cut in the sound of bullets over the image of this happening. And you can tell they're kind of laying it over. It's not actually like coming from the video. While some of the inmates are describing what's happening and how they were hearing racial slurs being hurled at them. And the sound of the bullets is just like so powerful.
You know what it is to shoot somebody and they can't shoot back? That's a holiday. Lord have mercy. And all they were saying was, save me a nigga. That's what they was hollering to each other.
It's not an easy watch, but I think that it's totally worth it. And, you know, this is, again, it is the most traditional, but I would be happy to see this take it as well. Because Daley Nelson is just, he's a pro at this point. He's a veteran documentarian, so.
Yeah, it's just a brilliant film. And I think one of the things that is so interesting about this incident is that there is a ton of footage and photography of what was going on inside the prison for a variety of reasons, including the fact that the inmates invited the media in to observe what was happening, because part of what they wanted to do was be able to get the demands that they were making out to the public and make them feel urgent. There are things among the footage and the photography here that I hadn't seen before, even though I had seen some things about Attica before, simply because you're not often allowed to show certain kinds of things on certain kinds of platforms.
Right.
So if you, for example, have a story where people were humiliated by being marched around naked, you don't necessarily see that until you see it in a particular place where the point of it is to underscore that that was happening. I also want to talk about one other choice that I think really gets to the heart of what this documentary is supposed to be about. And that is that you meet all of these inmates and you sort of get to know who they are. You kind of get to understand where they were at mentally during the time this is all happening. But the documentary does not tell you what any of them were in Attica for. Mm. But you can tell that the filmmakers are saying, this is about, regardless of how you got here, what the conditions of incarceration do to people on both sides of the inmate and corrections officer side. And it's clearly, to me, a really specific decision, and I was glad they made it. And again, you can watch this one. It is on Amazon Prime Video and Showtime. The next one is Writing with Fire, which is by Sushmit Ghosh and Rintu Thomas. This is the first Indian documentary to be nominated in this category. It tells the story of a newspaper that is run by Dalit women, who are the women who have the lowest possible standing in India's caste system, essentially. But this reporter, whose name is Meera, and the women who work with her have this newspaper that they run, and they are using smartphones and just a ton of really tireless, you know, if you want to talk about shoe leather reporting, just a lot of really tireless journalism. And you follow these women as they challenge the government, especially what seems to be an epidemic of unprosecuted rape. And this film is coming to PBS on Monday, March 28th, that's the day after the Oscars. This one's really good too.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect, but I think from the very first scene where we see Meera interviewing a woman and her husband about a difficult subject, about being consistently gang raped by these men. And having told her that they had tried to go to the police and the police ignoring them. And then in the next scene, we see Mira going to the police and being like, why haven't you prosecuted this case? Why have you not taken up this case? And so this is like absolutely citizen journalism. And it tracks sort of the way in which this very small publication became such a huge part of the change that is going on in their city and in their country. And I think that it's does a really good job of sort of showing that and showing the way journalism can work at its best. One of my favorite recurring themes is Mira trying to help her journalists learn how to use technology because they are making that transition to digital. And there's one person in particular who's having trouble, but Mira has the patience of an angel. Like she's just like, okay, I'm going to teach you. I'm going to take an hour. I'm going to teach you all how to do this, how to read the English characters on your phone so that you can do this. And to really see her take all those people under her wing and lead them and seeing them confront all of these men usually on the job. This is one of those movies that's super inspiring in a way, but also like infuriating because it's like, I can't believe they have to go through all of this just to put out, you know, a paper and then go into digital. Like, but it's inspiring at the end. So,
yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that I love about it is that it has this combination of these very, very high stakes scenes, like, you know, Mira going to meet with a guy who kind of delights, I think, in making himself seem menacing to her. And it's never fully clear whether she is safe going to meet with this guy, whether this is a good idea. There are these very high stakes moments, but at the same time, there's also all this stuff where it is so familiar to anybody who has worked in any kind of journalism that you have this meeting where she's like, look, you know, we have to adjust. We have to get on digital. It's going to make what we're doing more accessible to more people. This is how people are taking things in. And if you've ever been in journalism, like it's funny how it's all so incredibly familiar and yet also so it taught me so much about a bunch of stuff that I absolutely didn't know. And that those shifts in tone and how, you know, some of these women who work on this paper, they don't really have the support of their families, but they're kind of working around it.
Oh, yeah.
The family kind of thinks it's weird, but that's fine, you know?
Well, it's the support of their families, and it's also the support of, like, actual infrastructure. Like, electricity is hard to come by sometimes, or, like, being able to charge your phone. And, like, the fact that they are just kind of working with the least amount of support and are still able to do this. Mm-hmm, the film also, like, tracks how many views their YouTube page grows over the years. And by the end of it, they've got something like 100 plus million views. And it's like the fact that they're able to get to that point with barely anything, it made me just appreciate that kind of journalism and what people are managing to do even under the worst of circumstances.
Absolutely. Mira for president, et cetera. So that's Writing with Fire. And again, it's going to be on PBS the day after the Oscars. The last one, if you have heard a lot about one of these films, maybe alongside Flea, it's probably Summer of Soul or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. That is the one that was directed by Amir Questlove Thompson of The Roots. It looks back on the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival, which brought a truly remarkable collection of musicians together. You see a lot of these wonderful performances. You hear about the history of how the festival happened, what the obstacles were, how they got everybody together. There are interviews with performers who were there and with other people. This is just a very joyful documentary that was super popular when people first saw it at Sundance last year. We covered this one in a full episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour on July 2nd of last year, if you're looking for that. It's streaming now on Hulu and on Disney Plus. I mean, I would have said, you know, a year ago, I'm going to be rooting for Summer of Soul, unquestionably, to win Best Documentary Feature, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still rooting for it. Like I said, I'm happy for any of these films to win. I've said a lot already about how I feel about this film, but I just keep coming back to the very end of it where Questlove is interviewing someone who was there as a kid, like he was five or so. The kid who's now an adult says something along the lines of, well, For a long time, I thought I dreamt this. I didn't believe that it actually happened. But now being able to go back and see this, like, I know now that I wasn't crazy. And that to me is just like, this is by far the, I think, the least heavy all of the documentaries we have, which I think might give it a leg up, perhaps. And also just like, this is the movie that everyone has been talking about for a while, if we're talking about predictions of what might win. But I think also it's just, it has that happiness, but there is also a political bent to this as well, because
for sure,
part of that title is the revolution that could not be televised. And that's because this was sort of buried for many years and many people didn't know it existed, in part because it was overshadowed by the mostly white Woodstock and other factors. And it does a really good job of weaving in those political moments and putting it into context with like what many Black Americans were feeling at that time. And so, yeah, I mean, look, this is a good movie, like all of them.
Yeah.
This is a good doc.
Yeah. It's honestly, I think if you weren't familiar with this story, which I wasn't, which I freely admit I wasn't, it really causes you to think, like, why is the nature of cultural and pop cultural history been such that you wouldn't be aware of it? Because when you see what the lineup is and everybody who is playing, that it's, you know, Stevie Wonder and Mahalia Jackson, but also like the Fifth Dimension and Nina Simone is there. And it's sort of like, how is this not something that you see clips of constantly? And as you said, there's been some back and forth about, you know, whether this footage was not exactly lost, but it certainly wasn't being shown.
Right.
And so,
but even that's the question, like, why wasn't it being shown?
Exactly. And it's, and in that sense, it's about the nature of history in some ways, which brings me back around to like how much I love this movie. I do think you're probably right. I think it's going to win, don't you? I think it's going to win.
I feel like it will. I would say its biggest other competition is Flea, but Flea is also nominated in a couple of other categories. So I can see Flea like kind of splitting a vote in some ways.
Yeah.
I can see it getting international or possibly even animated. I feel like it's probably going to be Summer of Soul, and I won't be mad at it. Like,
no.
I will be happy that Questlove is now an Oscar winner. Like, that would be cool.
Absolutely. I suspect it's going to win. And I will be happy that it won. I am unable to unvote for any of these movies.
Look, this is a happy problem to have because it rarely happens for the Oscars where, like, you feel very good about every pick.
It's true. Literally every single one of these, I will cheer loudly when it wins. Yeah. I just think they're all excellent. They're all great movies. Again, Flea is on Hulu. Ascension is on Paramount Plus. Attica is on Amazon Prime Video and Showtime. Writing with Fire is going to be on PBS the day after the Oscars. And Summer of Soul is on Hulu and Disney Plus. Check them out.
Yeah.
Seriously, you're going to get what we're talking about. They are all so good. This was such a good category to be covering this year.
Indeed.
We want to know what you think about the nominated films we discussed today. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Aisha Harris, thank you as always for being here.
Thank you as always, Linda.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Ramel Wood and Mike Katziff and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides the music you might just be bobbing your head to right now. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we will be diving into the new movie, Deepwater, glug glug.